unprovoked attack, blaming Hamas for disturbing the peace in the region. In the United States, politicians echo the same narrative. Former U.S. President George W. Bush calls Hamas cold-blooded killers.
This was an unprovoked attack by terrorist people willing to kill innocent people to achieve an objective. And don't be surprised if Israel takes whatever action is necessary to defend herself. And it's going to be ugly for a while. You're dealing with cold-blooded killers.
But is the Palestinian group's operation really an unprovoked attack? And isn't there anything surprising about it?
Let me show you a map of the Middle East.
Just a couple of weeks before Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had unveiled his future map of the region at the United Nations General Assembly. The map had no place for Palestinians, and Israel still included the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, as well as the occupied and illegally annexed Golan Heights of Syria. The little map was in fact the blueprint for the complete elimination of Palestine from the region for the sake of the so-called Greater Israel. Israel's prolonged policy of ignoring Palestinians' rights as a nation is clearly reflected in its illegal settlement projects. Built on usurped territories, these settlements and their cancerous expansion have dashed Palestinians' hopes for establishing their own state and ending their lingering limbo as a nation under occupation. In recent years, the Israeli regime has put settlement expansion at the top of its priorities. In one of the recent cases, Netanyahu passed a controversial resolution in June 2023 and gave a carte blanche to his cabinet to construct more settlements in the occupied West Bank. One month later, the head of the Regional Council for West Bank Settlements, Yossi Dagan, submitted a proposal to Netanyahu to increase the number of Jewish settlers in the northern West Bank from 170,000 to 1 million by 2050. There are already over 700,000 Israeli settlers living in 176 settlements and 186 so-called outposts in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. All of these settlements and outposts, and the settlers who live in them, are illegal under international law. Since occupying the West Bank and Gaza, Israel has unilaterally declared tens of thousands of hectares of a so-called state land for Israeli settlements. Mushrooming across Palestine, these illegal settlements have made life excruciatingly difficult for Palestinian communities, aggravating their already dire situation. In addition to depriving the families of a home, which is the main asset and source of mental, physical, and economic security, the settlement building and its concomitant evictions of Palestinians frequently result in the loss of livelihoods and expansion of poverty. These settlements always come with the uprooting of Palestinian trees, destruction of their cultivated land, and discriminatory management of water resources in favor of the settlers. To make life even more difficult, restrictions have been imposed on Palestinian movement and access to resources. The Israeli regime has set up checkpoints, barriers, and separation walls that drastically limit the freedom of movement for Palestinians. This has had a profound impact on their daily lives. It affects movement within parts of the occupied Palestinian territories between the West Bank and Gaza, as well as between occupied Palestinian territories and the rest of the world. Since 2007, Gaza has been subjected to a crippling blockade, which has caused immense suffering and a humanitarian crisis. The food supply is also limited by the siege. From 2007 to 2010, Israeli authorities kept a calorie count of Palestinians' nutritional needs to narrowly avoid malnutrition while restricting access to food for the people in Gaza. Today, according to the World Food Program, a significant portion of the population is food insecure. In 2022, 1.84 million people across Palestine, one-third of the population, did not have enough food to eat. Among these people, 1.1 million were considered severely food insecure, 90% of whom lived in Gaza. The Strip also suffers from an energy crisis. The Israeli ban on the entry of fuel into Gaza means that electricity production is severely limited. In 2023, before the Hamas-Israel escalation, Gaza had only 13 hours of electricity a day. The blockade has also taken a toll on the Strip's medical facilities. Hospitals lack basic supplies, equipment, and infrastructure, and are unable to handle severe cases or provide proper care for the chronically ill. The blockade also has crippled the economy, leading to high unemployment rates and widespread poverty. With nearly half of the population out of job, the Gaza Strip has one of the highest unemployment rates in the world. Data also indicate that more than 80% of the Gazans live in poverty. The blockade has turned the territory into an open-air prison where the residents have no place to go, no job to do, and no hope to cling to. According to the UNRWA report published in August 2023, for at least the last decade and a half, the socioeconomic situation in Gaza has been in steady decline. Israel's inhumane behavior usually takes even a harsher form. The regime's military operations in Gaza have led to high civilian casualties and widespread infrastructure damage. The destruction of homes, schools, and hospitals has left countless Palestinians dead, displaced, or in desperate need of assistance. Just within the period of a few weeks since October 7th, over 10,000 Palestinians have lost their lives, including over 4,100 children. In fact, in every action the Israeli regime takes, there is one recurring feature: lack of respect for Palestinian lives. From 2008 till September 2023, 6,407 Palestinians were recorded to have been killed by the Israeli regime, more than half through missile attacks. Targeting Al Ahli Hospital in Gaza on October 17th that killed more than 500 Palestinians was the very epitome of the regime's brutality. At the same time, Tel Aviv is also accused of using white phosphorus in its military onslaught on Gaza. The banned substance puts civilians at risk of serious and long-term injuries. As a weapon, white phosphorus has a significant incendiary effect that can severely burn people and set structures, fields, and other civilian objects in the vicinity on fire. Israel's use of the deadly chemical violates international norms. Prior to October 7th, there were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli prisons, kept under dangerous prison conditions. Of this number, nearly 2,000 were condemned to life sentences on trumped-up charges. Palestinian prisoners are subjected to torture, starvation, and thirst while being prevented from accessing their medicine. Israel is using different legal pretexts to withhold the detainees from different areas. Palestinians from the Gaza Strip who were arrested inside Israel are being held under the Unlawful Combatants Law, which allows authorities to detain Palestinians indefinitely without effective judicial review. The law defines an unlawful combatant as a person who has participated either directly or indirectly in hostile acts against Israel, or is a member of a force perpetrating hostile acts against Israel. On October 13th, Israel amended the law to make it easier to arrest Palestinians on mere suspicion. The unlawful combatant law is the equivalent of the so-called administrative detention in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, which allows Israel to hold Palestinians from those areas indefinitely under secret evidence, practically meaning under no evidence. The number of prisoners has now risen to more than 10,000 people. Since October 7th, Israel has arrested some 4,000 laborers from Gaza and more than 1,000 people in the occupied West Bank. Just a few days before Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, thousands of settlers carried out provocative tours of the mosque complex, following calls by extremist Jewish groups. Since the occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, Tel Aviv has allowed Israeli extremists to intimidate and violate the sanctity of the mosque. Under the so-called status quo agreement, only Muslims are allowed to pray inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Entering the mosque with boots on, beating worshippers, firing bullets and grenades, as well as vandalizing the site, have become common scenes in Al-Aqsa, the third holiest place for Muslims. In just 1 year, between September 2021 and September 2022, nearly 50,000 right-wing Jews raided Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's only part of the systematic Israeli campaign to Judaize Al-Quds. Against such a backdrop, the betrayal of the Palestinian cause by some Arab states in the form of the so-called Abraham Accords in 2022 and rumors that Saudi Arabia was just following suit could be regarded as the last straw. The normalization of ties between major Arab states and the Israeli regime sends shockwaves through the occupied territories. Forgotten by the international community, betrayed by Arab brothers and oppressed by the brutal regime of Israel. Palestinians are left with two hard choices: to give up the homeland altogether or to die for it. There is nothing surprising that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was launched from Gaza. It is an impoverished, congested place inhabited largely by Palestinian refugees expelled from their homes during the Nakba of 1948. Gaza has also been under a debilitating siege for years, which has taken a heavy toll on its people. In fact, what appears to be the largest military response by Palestinians in decades is an inevitable development, an act of resistance, and a reaction to the suffering of the nation under a brutal blockade and occupation. It is part of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. This struggle for freedom is, however, an uphill battle. The Israeli regime, in blind rage, has undertaken a new episode of mass killing of civilians. Israel is carpet bombing Gaza. Telecommunications infrastructure has been bombarded, effectively cutting off Palestinians in Gaza from the rest of the world. Tel Aviv has imposed a full blockade on Gaza, with no water, electricity, food, or medicine entering the strip. Meanwhile, the West Bank has been completely blocked. Checkpoints closed all across, paralyzing the whole territory. Israeli soldiers are shooting Palestinians and encouraging settlers to do so as well. Genocide is in the making. Israeli jets will continue to pound Gaza as long as the Gazans' hearts continue to pound for their land. But how many more Palestinians have to get killed? How many more men? How many more women? And how many more children? Life has lost its meaning for the Palestinians, who have been stripped of their homeland. So the only thing they care about is taking back their stolen land, their own land. That's the red line drawn by their blood.
اون چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
July 12, 1983. Place Hosseinia Jamaran, Tehran. The prophets held these two jobs, the spiritual job to extricate the people from captivity of the carnal soul and from the captivity of the clutches of the oppressors. This is a common feature of the prophets, that those that are followers of the prophets must sustain this feature, both from the aspect of spirituality, that individuals acquainted with spirituality must strengthen, and all the people themselves, must also strengthen this spirituality. And the second subject, that is the status establishment of justice.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "The difference between God's feast and people's feast is that when you go to a feast, you will have some items of food to eat and means of entertainment befitting your status. But in God's feast, one part is to observe the fast, another important item, which is a spiritual meal from the unseen, is the Holy Book of Quran. Your host has compelled you to fast. Block those avenues that lie open to worldly considerations and laws so that you are prepared for the Laylatul Qadr." Well, in this part of the speech of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, he is making an elegant comparison between the feast held by God and those feasts of people. God Almighty has invited us in the month of Ramadan to His banquet. As we see, fasting is God's banquet. It is not like a party with those formalities and lavish meals. It is a reception in which one should abstain from desires. Prayer in its real sense is of importance. Remembering God is the real sense of the word, and that is what brings tranquility to the heart.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
صلى الله عليه
صلي
يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صلي على طه النبي وآله.
الله سبحانه وتعالى says in his holy book, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب. Verily in the remembrance of Allah hearts do find rest. سورة الرعد, verse number 28. So remembrance of God means considering the presence of God everywhere. One should be preoccupied with remembrance of God and His blessings and thank God for His favors. And remember God so that He will help us succeed and curtail those hands which intend to sow discord among us. We should rectify ourselves in the holy month of Ramadan. We need to purify and refine the self to the last day of our lives. Prophets were also in need of this. Grand prophets were also the same, but they had realized their needs and subsequently acted to fulfill their needs. However, since we are veiled, we could not understand our duty and did not fulfill our duties. However, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has bestowed us with all types of blessings. Blessings, you know, mean that we should plan to act according to the duties that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has set for us. We should pray so that God
the Almighty would make us successful in acting according to His gratifications in the service we have undertaken.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
The Bustle of Life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
Donald Trump has publicly defended House Speaker Mike Johnson against an ouster threat by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson appeared together on Friday, 12th of April, at the former president's Florida estate. A show of unity as the embattled Johnson faces a threat to his leadership. Speaker Mike Johnson is under threat from his own party. Trump said of Johnson, "He's doing a really good job under very tough circumstances, and I appreciate that he came to Mar-a-Lago." The focus of their joint appearance was on what they call election integrity, a chief priority for Donald Trump, who continues to lie about the results of the 2020 presidential race. Trump's attention on the issue comes in an election year when there is expected to be another tight matchup against President Joe Biden. Mike Johnson, who was one of the 147 GOP lawmakers who voted to overturn the results of the 2020 election, said on Friday, 12th of April, that congressional Republicans will introduce legislation to require people who register to vote in a federal election to prove that they're an American citizen. As he outlined the proposal, Johnson made several false claims about non-citizens voting in elections, repeating assertions that Donald Trump had made in recent days. Both leaders also used the opportunity to continue to slam President Joe Biden and Democrats over their handling of the southern border, with Mike Johnson falsely stating that they wanted to turn migrant crossings the border illegally into voters, claiming that they could sway next November's presidential election. Donald Trump claimed he would not, if elected, sign a national abortion ban, something that Mike Johnson supports. Also looming large over the appearance were other recent areas of disagreement between Trump and Johnson on additional Ukraine aid and the reauthorization of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. Donald Trump encouraged House GOP hardliners this week to block reauthorizing FISA, resulting in an embarrassing setback for Mike Johnson, though the legislation ultimately passed the House earlier on Friday with bipartisan support. Asked about the Pfizer passage, Donald Trump said he was still not a big fan of Pfizer, but said he told everyone to do what you want. The bill passed reauthorizes a key Pfizer program for 2 years, meaning that if Donald Trump is re-elected, he will have the opportunity to review it again. On Ukraine aid, Trump said he and Mike Johnson were looking at it right now. He appeared to back the idea of House Republicans considering making aid available to Ukraine as a loan, and he continued his criticism of how Washington has handled assistance to the war-torn country. Such topics are points of contention between Mike Johnson and the far-right wing of the Republican Party, including Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who introduced a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair last month. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Mike Johnson met this week for the first time since she filed the motion. They appeared still at odds after nearly an hour of conversation, as Greene didn't back away from her threat to force a vote on whether to remove Mike Johnson from the top post. The Georgia congresswoman told reporters she heard a lot of excuses from Mike Johnson and that she urged him not to move forward with aid to Ukraine. Donald Trump's orbit isn't happy with Marjorie Taylor Greene, a long vocal Trump supporter, and her threat to throw the House GOP into chaos again with another speakership battle. Another battle for the Speaker's chair could undercut the Republican Party's effort to maintain its majority in the House of Representatives to flip the Senate and win the White House. Donald Trump said he gets along very well with both Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene when asked about the situation during the joint appearance at Mar-a-Lago. "He's doing about as good as you're going to do," Trump said of Johnson. "I'm sure Marjorie understands that. She's a very good friend of mine, and I know she has a lot of respect for the Speaker." Pressed further on Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate, Donald Trump said, "It was unfortunate that people bring it up, because right now we have much bigger problems." The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered this story. Standing alongside House Speaker Mike Johnson on Friday, 12th of April, Donald Trump offered his most vocal support for the leader of the House as the threat of a motion to vacate hangs over his head from one of the former president's staunchest supporters, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia. "We're getting along very well with the Speaker, and I get along with Marjorie Taylor Greene," Trump said when asked about the motion to vacate during a press conference at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. "It's not a very easy situation for any speaker. I'm sure that Marjorie understands that, and I know she has a lot of respect for the speaker." Trump concluded by saying, "I stand with the speaker." This statement represents the most vocal that Trump has been against the motion to vacate threat, which was also used earlier this year against a former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. When the motion to vacate against Kevin McCarthy was filed, Donald Trump remained silent, not taking a stance one way or another, at least publicly. But after seeing the turmoil that resulted from Kevin McCarthy's ouster, Trump now appears to be trying to tamp down any motion to vacate threat by publicly supporting Mike Johnson, even if he didn't directly say he opposes Marjorie Taylor Greene's attempt to oust him as Speaker. While he dodged the main question everyone wanted answers to, whether or not he opposes Greene trying to oust Johnson, Trump did express frustration that the motion to vacate has been used this Congress. Donald Trump said, "It's unfortunate that people keep bringing it up." CBS News has also covered the same story. A photo op was worth a thousand words for House Speaker Mike Johnson on Friday, 12th of April, as he stood alongside former President Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, presenting a united front at a critical time in Johnson's tenure to announce a new GOP election integrity bill. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for president, told reporters that Johnson is doing a really good job under very tough circumstances, precisely the endorsement that Mike Johnson needed as he tries to fend off a threat to his speakership from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. Donald Trump said he gets along very well with Greene, but made it clear that House Republicans shouldn't undertake another drawn-out battle for the Speaker's gavel anytime soon. "We're getting along very well with the Speaker, and I get along very well with Marjorie," Trump said. "We have a Speaker. He was voted in, and it was a very complicated process. I think it's not an easy situation for any Speaker. I think he's doing a very good job. He's doing as good a job as you can do, and I'm sure that Marjorie understands that." The press conference was ostensibly about the new election integrity bill that Mike Johnson said House Republicans will take up soon. The Speaker said the still unreleased legislation would require proof of citizenship to register to vote and closes loopholes in state voter registration protocols that require voters to assert their citizenship, but not necessarily to prove it. States would also be required to remove any non-citizens from voter rolls, Mike Johnson emphasized.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and teenagers, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed light on this important subject. Salaamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So another question we have over here is that why is it important for a teenager to talk about their feelings? If you could expand on that.
Yes, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. It's for a variety of reasons that teenagers especially should discuss about their feelings, what they have. They shouldn't, you know, vent up what they feel so that they can let out in a bad way. For example, watching too many movies or going with some friends or going out and loitering, you know, in the park, or even sometimes bad habits for boys like smoking. Because they've vented inside themselves those feelings and they can't let out to anyone. So first of all, that communication gap shouldn't be there. So to have a healthy outlet of release is to talk about it. So sometimes it involves even talking about people. But you know, Islam allows that if you talk about people for the sake of the fact that you want to, resort yourself, you want to improve yourself, or you want to know where you went wrong, then you can mention those things, for example, to a person you can confide in. And there can be none better than a mother or a parent who understands these laws of Islam and knows that there is no, like, backbiting done over it. It's just to make them feel where they went wrong.
True.
And probably if there was some solution to it. So this is the best and most healthy outlet to release the stress and the anxiety.
Yeah, and I think what you just said, like, stress is something that's really killing the youth right now. And a lot of them, like a lot of my friends said that because of all the stress that they are bottling up, it's really making them, you know, release it in the wrong ways. And they said they can't help it. But some of my friends became Muslims and they said after, you know, seeing how we have Allah and how we have Islam that kind of caters for all of this, they show this relationship that's supposed to be made between a family. They say that we never knew this, we never heard of this, and we feel like it's so strong in, especially in these Islam. Muslim communities, yeah. Which is so special.
It's all because of those laws that have integrated inside their countries that make them feel that they are so free now. True. They can even leave their homes, they can even complain in the courts. They don't know that this is such a healthy outlet, right?
Definitely.
So another reason why talking about feelings is necessary is, you know, when a person, a teenager especially, verbalize their feelings, they know it what is with clarity what they're feeling, because it's not like a jumbled thing in your head. You know, sometimes like some things are going on in your life, but you don't know, you mix them all up. So when you want that communication to happen, a teenager will know themselves for clarity. What is it that they are facing at that point in time? They won't mix it up in their mind. And the mind is such a thing that, you know, so many things can get inside. True. At one go. But verbally, when you're expressing, it's just one thing at a time, right? So they themselves will know with clarity what they're facing, and then you can help them and get rid of the root cause and come to terms with those feelings and emotions that they're facing.
Definitely.
So this is why one reason that we have to emphasize this communication and emphasize for them to let out their feelings. It's very important, especially for a girl.
Definitely. So we're just going to pause briefly and resume in a moment.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing about one of the questions that a parent had, which was, why is it important for a teenager to talk about their feelings? And you have said some very interesting points, some of which were, you know, if they bottle up too much, they end up, you know, falling astray, releasing it in the wrong places. And when you express verbally, it very much clears your mind, which is so important, especially for a youth.
That's right. Another of the reason is that parents could help as elders and guides to the teenagers for support and guidance, which the teenagers need most. And the teenagers, if they trust the parents, they would get the most support and guidance from parents more than even their peers and their age mates.
Definitely.
Friends would lend a help, like a listening ear. But would they be able to guide and support? Support is a very, you know, like important thing in a teenager's life, that one who is like a backbone for you.
True.
Wanting you to go through that. As far as financial support is concerned, example, any support that, you know, one needs at that time in a crucial moment, friend would do it in a very limited way. But the parents are the best supporters. So to open up that conversation with the teenager and to let them out, to talk about it, is very important. That is the starting of it, so that you can support and guide the teenager and not let her, you know, go astray, go for guidance somewhere else. Or more so, sometimes even go to a psychiatrist, where you have to end up spending more when they get so much stress in the long run that they can't handle their own situation, it comes to a point in time that you have to take them to the psychiatrist, which is a big issue in every way. You have to combat with it. You have to come in terms with it. Whilst if you go and see, the mother is the best psychiatrist if she knows what she's doing. And she goes about it in the way that Islam says, you know, going about it in a very like a delicate, fruitful, compassionate manner.
Definitely.
To get positive results out of it.
And also, I feel, especially teenagers today, they don't like when you kind of attach yourself too much to them, or when they feel like, okay, everything I'm doing is being watched, or, you know, or so I feel like there has to be a very good balance over here where parents show that they really care, they really support, but it's not like they're coming in the way every time or they're going to be there all the time watching everything. So, you know, that balance.
So that, yeah, that respecting of their privacy is important.
Exactly.
At the same time, watching over is very important.
Yeah.
That why do they feel what they're feeling now? Why have they bottled up so much? So to create that atmosphere of, you know, like light atmosphere so that they can feel like talking is to make them happy first, in the first instance, to do what is good for them, to make them feel lighthearted, you know, that this is now maybe cooking their favorite meal, taking them out for a walk, buying something for them as a gift. So that will open them up. So like what they would like or need, you know, they would feel that somebody loves me and they understand. And then they would, of course, naturally talk about their feelings.
Yeah.
And this is when one should guide and support them.
True. Even
tell
like
them very politely that this is what the consequence will be if this happens. Or guide them that, you know, like or support them. Whatever they want to embark upon, support them.
Exactly. So let's just have a short break and we'll continue shortly.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we've been discussing about Islamic upbringing. And one of the questions that we were discussing was why it's important for teenagers to talk about their feelings. And you said one of the last points you mentioned was parents can be guides and supports, while you won't find that in everybody. Mostly parents can be that
the best,
main
yeah.
support. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing is adolescents and teenagers sometimes can be very isolating. They can be very aloof and lonely. And sometimes we can misunderstand them also. So we should not misunderstand them. We should know that this is like a natural process
yeah.
of growing up, you know, that isolation and loneliness. We should respect them at the same time. And we should always offer that, you know, that kind of, you know, support and feeling that they, you know, you are ready for to hear them out, and also ensure that they are not alone in this experience.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, to feel that somebody is also sharing that thing, what you are going through right now, you're not alone in that experience. For example, a girl might fail her high school, you know, and she might not be able to go to the university, and she has to probably do one more year
yeah.
to go through the exams and everything. So a parent, if they are bold enough and they are also compassionate enough, they would say that even we went through this.
Yeah.
We didn't probably make it through, but we were still studious enough to do it the next few years. Or maybe we left a gap in between and we went through another thing. For example, studying something that we loved, not just studying at random. Anything that just, you know, suits the curriculum
yeah,
of the time.
Yeah.
No, whatever you love. And who said that, for example, as far as this is concerned, this discussion of passing your exam or something, who said that this is the only way to show your talent? There are so many people who fail exams, but they are so talented people. So we should, you know, like remind them that they are not alone in their experience. Be that whatever, illness. Illness is, so many people are suffering. Maybe a girl is maybe having epilepsy or something like that.
Yeah.
We should remind them that people are worse off than that and people are still moving along. So this is not lecturing. This is remindance in a very cool way. so that the teenager can feel that, yeah, it's not only me. So, you know, just as you feel that you have some company, whatever you are sharing, and people are worse off than you, you feel a bit heartened. You feel a bit better.
Yeah, you feel situation. Like I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I'm not the only one who feels sad and who feels a sense of failure or who feels that they don't have friends. And there are so many people who pass along these kind of phases, but yet they come out as winners in the end.
Definitely. And I think, you know, Islam is so special that we kind of constantly are getting reminded that we have a special goal to reach. And the more trials and tribulations we go through, we suffer, there is something greater waiting for us over there. And although this is difficult to explain to teenagers, I just remember just knowing this concept in general was really helping me in my life. There was a time where I had to get, a surgery done, and I felt like, for a while life seemed so bleak. But just my mom would keep on reminding me about these kind of simple instances, not pushing it, and I would just feel at peace for a while that, there is somebody over there watching over me, which knows my situation, knows my position, and I feel like that was very special.
Yeah, and that's like, lucky are those teenagers who have such parents like yours, inshallah. We pray that all teenagers have your kind of parents. In this day and age, life is going on so fast, and parents don't even have time, sometimes for their children to express so much. And that's why parents, if they're home, they have time to reflect upon the problems of their children. Definitely. It's an ideal situation when the parents have more time for their children rather than outside, right?
Yeah, Hasan. Thank you so much. This was very fruitful, and thank you so much for your valuable time, and we hope to see you in the next one. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening. You've just listened to IRIB English Radio. And if you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI, Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.